Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Our live draft coverage continues on 670 The Score, presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
It is night one of draft coverage here on 670 The Score. I'm Rami Makhlouf. Hub Arkish was with me earlier. Parkins and Spiegel were live from Detroit. If you missed any of it, check it out on 670 The Score or on your Odyssey app. Just use that handy dandy rewind feature. Go back and check it all out. But not until we hear from Bears general manager Ryan Poles after he nabbed Caleb Williams at number one and then Roma Dunze down at number nine. And he spoke to the assembled Chicago media just a little while ago.
All right. I'll kick it off. I just want to say thank you to my staff. Really successful night. But a lot of countless hours travel go into getting players like this and on our team. Want to thank our coaches for the partnership that we have, the alignment, really good partnership in terms of getting all the draft prep done and the players lined up on our board, which is great. And then lastly, just want to thank Kevin and George for the resources that they put into this that allow us to do this job at a high level. Really excited. If you told me we would end up with both Caleb and Rome weeks ago, I would have said you were crazy. But there were two guys that obviously we were really excited to have. Not only are they really good players, but really good people as well that are going to continue to enhance our locker room and our team moving forward. So I'll open up to questions.
Ryan, when did you know that Caleb was going to be the answer for you guys, the direction you're going to go, quarterback?
Yeah, it's kind of two parts. Like, when you watch the tape, it was easy to see the talent and wanted him on our team. But it was all about going through the process. So once we got through the 30 visit and spent time with him, got him with some of the guys on our team, he kind of felt good about the person, the culture fit. Knew at that point that he was going to help us, and we were ready to go.
Ryan, you guys had three breakout groups, determined receiver, tackle.
You know who won that competition.
Right? I know now. Right, so I asked you the other day about, you know, if you had an opportunity to pick. I don't know where Rome was on your personal board, but I said if you had the opportunity to pick the third receiver or maybe the top edge, top D tackle, how would you kind of go about that process? What made receiver be ultimately the answer for you?
I'd go back one step. It wasn't so much like a specific position group. The players, you know, like I told you the other day, Ian and I sequenced the board out all the way across. And Rome was extremely high on that list. That's why I was nervous that he wasn't going to be there at nine. Our simulations, it was about a 50-50 shot if he was going to be there. But as it started to unfold, Ian had to hold me back from not trying to trade up and do something crazy to get him. But it ended up working out really well.
What was your knowledge on the front end of the workout that they had with Rome and Caleb with having DJ and Keenan out there?
Yeah, I found out. Was it 2 days ago that popped out? And I thought it was pretty cool. Still, at that point, I was nervous that that wasn't going to be able to work out or we'd have to do something to make that work out. So when I found that out, it was cool. And obviously now that group's worked together, which is good.
Ryan, we talked
to Caleb. You see all the talent. That's obvious. You see what he brings to the table. On your end, how do you make sure that the Bears get this right?
Yeah, that's a great question. One, the infrastructure has to be there, and I think we've done that part to have the talent around our quarterback now. I think the other thing is it's going to be our entire organization is going to have to be on the same page on how we handle this, how we develop Caleb. But I'll also say that it's I think we have a really good approach with all of the players. And I think that's different than maybe it was in the past. The way that we take it really serious in terms of the development from a nutritional standpoint to performance, to mental skills, to how our coaches teach. Like, I think we've made some really good strides there. But it's going to take everybody, and everyone's got to be on the same page. We got to adjust to strengths and weaknesses that the player has.
Ryan, Caleb said, you know, I asked him a question about the history, the Bears' history of quarterback, and how it hasn't gone well. He said he had questions for you guys, and you guys were very explained things to him. What were those conversations like?
I think he just kind of wanted to get a feel for everybody in the organization. What were we about in terms of, like, what's our direction, what's our North Star, how are we going to get there? And I think through our actions, we've shown that. And, you know, history's the history. Like, I'm kind of done talking about it. Like, we go back so much all the time, and those days are over. So we're bringing players in here that want to really just change everything up and do things a different way. Obviously, we love our history here, but it hasn't been smooth recently, and it's time to change. So I feel like we got to stop going back all the time.
Brian, what are the specific aspects of Rome's skill set that he was the number one receiver for you guys and that just really was a pull for you?
Man, I don't know where to start with that guy. First of all, human being, what a great guy. Work ethic. Just blue collar in the way he goes about things. But as a receiver, he can align anywhere, inside, outside. You love his ability to finish in contested situations. Plays strong, plays big. Run after catch is very good. He's a punt returner as well. I mean, the kid just put time in and got better and better every single year, and he's a winner. Can impact the game at any moment. If you're a quarterback and you're in doubt, you want to just go give a guy an opportunity to go finish, he's your guy. He's done that consistently.
Ryan, after nine, what was the rest of the night like for you guys? Was there any talk of maybe even trying to get back into the first round for a third pick? What was the rest of the night like after the ninth pick?
Every year there's like that feeling around like the teens or 20s. You're like, maybe we can get back in. But then you start looking at what it would take, and we would just do damage to ourselves for this year and for next year. We don't have a ton of draft capital this year to even really do that. So we just kind of took it all in, patient, kind of talked about our evaluations, look forward for tomorrow and see how that's going to play out, what positions are going to go, what opportunities we're going to have.
Were you getting calls for number nine?
Yeah. There's a bunch of calls. We made calls. I think that's just kind of standard practice. Everyone just kind of get a feel for where everybody's at, but nothing like crazy.
Right. I know you had a different perspective when you watched Caleb in 2023, but I'm curious whether it was Oklahoma or his Heisman year. Did you happen to catch a game of his or remember kind of the first time he caught your eye?
I was watching that Texas-Oklahoma game for sure. And I was like, who is this kid? Some of those throws were ridiculous. And then you kind of track players as you go along and watching Addison. What was it, last year, 2 years ago? You saw the talent.
Ryan, right, all that's gone into this quarterback decision and leading up to this point, well, what's the feeling like for you to be at the finish line and to have Caleb as your quarterback?
Finish line of the process?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels great. It's a guy that has all the tools. But it's going to take hard work. It's going to take getting into sync with his teammates. There's a long road ahead to develop the places where he needs to develop to win games and bring a championship here. But the beautiful thing is we have the right people here. We have the right teammates, and I feel really good about it.
Ryan, as it turned out, how many quarterbacks in this class were worth starting over with a rookie as opposed to keeping Justin?
Can you say that again for me?
I'm sorry. How many quarterbacks in this class would it were in your mind were worth starting over with a rookie as opposed to keeping Justin?
I didn't even get down. Like, I didn't even think that way. It was Caleb, and obviously we watched the other players, but decided on Caleb.
Ryan, what's your
What has that journey been like for you from 2022 to the group you have now? Where you, I mean, the group you inherited, and then some of the pitfalls along the way to end up with what you have now.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped. We've done good work. We've brought. Again, it's one thing to bring talent in, but it's another to bring talent that, like, they're good people and they're great teammates. I mean, the stuff that these guys have been doing over the last few weeks is incredible, just seeing how close everybody is. But, yeah, we're looking today just what the roster looks like. And it's been a journey. I know it hasn't been that many years, but it feels like it's been a lot of years. So we've done good work. But obviously, like I said the other day, we got to win.
Brian, how would you say Caleb and Shane have hit it off? Mm-hmm. And what was his involvement? And, you know, obviously it seems like it was an easy decision for you, but specifically he's going to be directing him on what to do.
Yeah. No, that's been really cool to see from going out there in the pro day to hear about some of the Zooms that they've done over the last few weeks, just getting to know each other, to talk ball. So that relationship had to be there, and that was part of our process as well.
Now that the first round is over, I'm sure there are some guys that you thought maybe would have went and that they slid out of that first round. You always often talk about flexibility. You guys got 2 seconds next year that give you some flexibility to maybe see what's available in terms of moving up tomorrow?
Potentially. We'll see what the numbers look like. And just kind of gauge if that's something we need to do.
Is this mainly for you to have just the 4 picks, just having had double-digit picks? I think you had 10 last year, 11 the previous year, and now 4. Does it feel empty at all? Like, I mean, I know that you're happy with what you did in the offseason and what you did with those picks, but it's got to feel strange to only have 4 picks.
With 1 and 9, it doesn't feel that strange. It'll feel strange after the 4th round. Tomorrow I'll probably just go get a workout or something.
Brian, you said earlier about not wanting to do something crazy and moving up. I mean, when did you get the sense this evening that Rome was going to be there at 9? Were there nerves up there thinking the dominoes were starting to fall the right way for you guys?
Yeah, there was definitely nerves. There was a couple moves ahead of us. And then what we do, our pro staff does a really good job just identifying needs of different teams. Our analytics team puts kind of percentages of where guys can go. So we really tapped into that, and you know, once we got to like 7, we started feeling pretty good that he might make it.
Was there one pick there that made you feel like he was going to fall your way, like something happened before you?
Not specifically, no.
Well, the Atlanta pick, though. I mean, is that what? No, you were expecting it.
No, I'm just happy it worked out that way.
Brian, how do you project Caleb's intuition for the position? You know, his instinct, like, you know, sensing the blitz and manipulating defenses and just kind of willing a team over the finish line. How important is that to you, and how do you project that for Alekin?
Yeah, the instincts are, for any position, are so important. It's we oftentimes look at things that you can coach and you can't coach. And when you have the things you can't coach and we can develop the other parts of it, you feel good about it. So he's got special instincts, awareness, especially in the pocket, to, you know, manipulate the pocket, get in and out of the pocket. Spatial feel for space is special. That's his special sauce. And then once we kind of speed things up and start to identify different coverages, and he's got to, you know, there's an adjustment to an NFL offense that he's got to go through as well. So we're really excited to work with the tools that he has.
Brian, when you zeroed in on how Caleb operates in the clutch, what kind of stood out to you in big moments?
Yeah, you look for poise, guys that the game kind of slows down for them in those critical moments, that they're capable of, you know, making those special throws when you need them the most, especially down the stretch. That clutch part's really, really, really good, and you need that to seven games for how many close games we have in this league. You got to have guys that can finish, especially in like 2-minute drills and things like that.
What about just how he faced adversity? I know last year wasn't always easy for him.
Yeah, we had conversations about that, and I think it's the best thing that could have happened to him. Because you're going to have that in the NFL, you're going to have the down weeks, months, and you're going to have to find a way to get through them. You're going to have to tap into the different resources to get through them and get back to playing at a high standard. So I think going through that adversity helped him to continue to really find his edge, but also to recover when things don't go well.
Kind of going back to Jason's question about the journey of the receiver room, where do you think along your own journey did you learn to kind of flush and move on from mistakes? Sometimes GM's kind of reluctant to acknowledge and then pivot from a mistake. You seem to be much more willing to say, "And that didn't really work, let's move on."
Yeah. I think I've mentioned this before. You all know I played with Matt Ryan, and then he was with the Falcons, and I called him for a question with the roster, and he just was like, the players always know. The locker room are always know. So if you're going to tell them to put their egos away or take ownership of things, but then you got someone that's going to hold on to, you know, a certain player longer just because they picked them and they don't want that on their record, the players know. And if you're going to be consistent, not a hypocrite, you need to do it the right way. So that always just kind of was in my head.
But quarterbacks have so much responsibility, you know, on and off the field, right? With your teammates, with the media. What is it about Caleb that makes you think he's going to be able to handle that in this market with this team?
He's highly competitive, and he wants to be great, and he has passion for the game. If you have those, you're going to be fine in whatever environment that you're in. You know, obviously, through the ups and downs, you're going to have thick skin, and you're going to make some mistakes here or there, and it's just how you recover, and do you learn from it? That's the big thing, and he's a guy that does learn from parts of his journey and parts of those, you know, adverse times and recover, so I think it'll be fine.
Seems like he's got, like, a comfort in his own skin, too.
Yeah, he's got a lot of comfort in his own skin, which is good to see. You got to have that. Thank you.
There's Ryan Poles, Bears general manager, speaking after round one of the NFL draft tonight, where they nabbed Caleb Williams, number one quarterback out of USC. No shocker there. I think everybody was one for one on their mock drafts at that point. But Rome Odunze slips to them at number nine. I think most Bears fans loving that. Would love to hear from you at 312-644-6767. Rami Makhlouf with you till 1 a.m. And it's just me and you with those calls and those texts. Until then, again, 312-644-312. Wow, I just completely botched that. 312-644-6767. That's a recovery right there, ladies and gentlemen. More of your calls, more of your texts. I got some real interesting stuff out of that Ryan Poles press conference right there that I want to share with you, and the discussion we were having before Ryan Poles about the offensive coordinator situation, and some thoughts on that have come in the text line. Rami Makhlouf with you on night one of our draft coverage right here on 670.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Score and back right after this.
He's highly competitive, and he wants to be great, and he has passion for the game. If you have those, you're going to be fine in whatever environment that you're in. You know, obviously, through the ups and downs, you're going to have thick skin, and you're going to make some mistakes here or there, and it's just how you recover, and do you learn from it? That's the big thing, and he's a guy that does learn from parts of his journey and parts of those, you know, adverse times and recover. So I think it'd be fun.
Our live draft coverage continues on 670 The Score, presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
That's Bears GM Ryan Poles, who we heard from just before the break, his entire press conference after night one of the NFL draft. Rami Makhlouf with you on 670 The Score, continuing our draft coverage till 1 a.m. It's just me and you on the phones and in the text at 312-644-6767. Till then, Alex Kuhn on the other side of the glass on the ones and twos. And draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. And I'm going to get to your calls. I'm going to get to your text in just 1 second. But just a couple takeaways from what we heard from Ryan Poles tonight after night one of the NFL draft. First of all, what we just heard him say about Caleb Williams and the competitive spirit of that kid and the fact that he wants to be great. Every year when we're leading up to the NFL draft, and especially if there is like a clear-cut runaway number one draft pick, there are going to be people who pick and poke at that and try and find the flaws and the holes in that guy's game or that guy's personality or that guy's makeup. And of course that was going to happen with Caleb Williams. And I heard it and you heard it. I never put a lot of stock in that stuff, man. And Hub Arkish, who was here earlier, he talked about Caleb's parents, who are both very accomplished people, and maybe them realizing that some of their involvement or maybe some of the way that they were handling things was not serving Caleb Williams in the greatest way. And so they pulled back or changed course a little bit. But as far as Caleb Williams himself, the prima donna stuff, the Hollywood stuff, the painted fingernails, the crying in his mom's lap after losing that game, none of that stuff bothered me, man. All I ever saw or heard from Caleb Williams on the field, what we heard and saw from him off the field, was just a competitor and a dude who wanted to be great, a dude who had the utmost confidence in himself. I've never been scared off by anything about Caleb Williams, the dude, away from the field.
No, I thought like that entire time it felt like crap. All the painting of the nails, it was complete malarkey, for lack of a better term. But I think the thing that proved that, Rami, was how many teammates did you hear come out and say,
"Yep,
I didn't like the guy"?
None.
Not at USC.
None that I can think
of. Not at Oklahoma after he unceremoniously left Oklahoma.
Right. Yeah.
After Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma. And my brother has some friends who play in the USC football program who say his work ethic is outstanding. He's a great teammate. I just think that was kind of the point where everybody's like, okay, maybe all of that off the field discussion is just the ridiculous noise that we hear every year around some prospect.
And he is a brand. He's to quote,
of course he is.
To quote Jay-Z, he's a businessman, not a businessman. And that's fine too, because he understands that his brand, or at least the best thing going for his brand, is winning and being the best player that he can be, or as he says, the best player to ever do it. You know who else built a brand while playing sports? A guy named Michael Jordan. Like, you can do it. And I'm not comparing him to Michael Jordan. Don't get it twisted. I'm just saying, like, that shouldn't scare you off a guy that he's a brand and he has aspirations off the field to build something better using his, you know, name, image, and likeness, to borrow from the NCAA. I have no problem with that whatsoever, as long as football remains at the top, which I'm pretty convinced that it is. I've seen or heard nothing that leads me to believe that football doesn't come first for this guy. And then the rest of that stuff comes as a result of how good he is at football.
Hasn't it felt like the entire draft process for Caleb has been him trying to show, yeah, football is the most important thing. I don't care about the lights or the glam or any of that stuff that they're saying. We didn't hear all that much from him. We saw him at the combine where it looked like he hadn't gotten a haircut in like 3 months. And then we see him at the pro day shaking hands with Keenan Allen and talking about how I know there was a point there where he had the pink phone case that caused a stir. But
oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, like, yeah, the pink phone case, which was apparently a red flag for some
people.
Yeah,
he's just been kind of laying low. And I think that for those that have been doubting whether or not he was going to be a problem, like some were leading you to believe, I think this draft process has quelled a lot of those concerns, almost all of those concerns.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean he's going to be, you know, a Hall of Famer. He's the next Patrick Mahomes, or put whatever name on it you want to put on it. I'm just saying that's not what's going to stop him. That's not going to hold him back. All these things that people have been poking and prodding at since, you know, the draft process began, that's not going to be his downfall. That won't be his Achilles heel or why he doesn't pan out to be the guy that we all sit here tonight hoping that he is. I'll get to your calls in just 1 second. 312-644-6767. Again, it's just you and me till 1 a.m. We were talking about the offensive coordinator position in the last segment, a couple segments ago, I guess. The whole night is blending together at this point. But talking about the fact that if Shane Waldron has a great year, or the Bears offense has a great year, and Caleb Williams does, he's going to be in demand and the next head coach, and all of a sudden you're looking for a new offensive coordinator a year or two into your quarterback's career as a Chicago Bear. And from the 815 says, Rami, remember how many voices said Ben Johnson was getting a head coaching job this year? Where is he? That's because he didn't want any of them. Ben Johnson could have had a job this offseason if he wanted to have one of those jobs.
I thought that if there was going to be someone the Bears would look at, it would be him. I never bought into the Harbaugh stuff.
And maybe he's looking at it and going, huh, Nick Sirianni's on the hot seat. Mm-hmm. I could coach Jalen Hurts.
That's exactly what he's doing.
Maybe Matt Eberflus is on the hot seat.
I'm not going to
Caleb
Washington.
Williams.
Are you kidding me?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Why would I go? He maybe sees better jobs on the horizon, and so he's holding out, or just didn't see those situations as places where he could go and succeed, because a coach needs that as well. Like, he doesn't go in there and change the whole thing and turn it all around himself. This from the 815. It annoys me when someone says a great quarterback will be great. How do we know that some of the numerous failed, highly drafted QBs wouldn't have been great if they'd had coaching stability? Rami, he put with an I. Forgive me if I'm butchering your name. I agree with you. There's an E at the end, but close enough. And that's referring to a text we saw earlier of, oh, if a guy loses his offensive coordinator, he's fine. He becomes his own offensive coordinator. Look at Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and these guys.
Peyton Manning did that like 15 years into his career.
Peyton Manning had Tom Moore for the vast majority of his time in Indianapolis. There's a reason that the Patriots kept bringing back Josh McDaniels when he'd go somewhere else, because they knew that his working relationship with Tom Brady worked. Terrible head coach. Not a great guy, from what I understand. But apparently, he knows how to work with Tom Brady, and Tom Brady likes working with him, and they do good work together. You know what I mean? So that there's a reason that they bring back Josh McDaniels. There's a reason Tom Moore was in Indianapolis for so long. Yeah, guys can take on more of the responsibility and the load of play calling and scheming and everything else. Peyton Manning probably took more of that on than any quarterback that I can ever remember. That doesn't mean that having some stability and continuity with the number one guy you report to and work in conjunction with and your offensive coordinator isn't a good thing. You want that. I can give you example after example of guys who had that and flourished in part because they had that. I think that's all I had on the coach thing. Let's go out to Charles from, where is Charles calling from? Westchester. Charles, you're on 670 The Score.
Okay, so my big problem, or what's going to make Caleb successful or not successful is what they do with the line. If you look at the games where Fields really failed, there were people in the backfield with him before he even turned around to throw. The last game was ridiculous. And that guy had a 4.240. He ran like 23 miles an hour. What's going to make Caleb successful if they don't get him a line to throw behind?
I appreciate the call, Charles. I didn't think the line, I mean, it depends on what metric or what scouting website you want to look at. I thought the line was average last year. Not terrible, not great. I thought it was average, and I think they got some young guys up there and hopefully better health that you could get a little bit better performance from that offensive line this year. I'm not banking on it, but I think it's very, very possible that they could get a better performance from the O-line this year. That being said, I would like to see them add to the depth chart on the offensive line. Patrick Manley repeated a couple of times during the Parkinson Spiegel draft special of, you know, in today's NFL, it's not necessarily about who's the best left tackle, right tackle, guard, center. It's about getting your best five guys out there on your offensive line unit blocking. And even if it involves a little shifting and moving guys around, I would like to see them add some depth and some competition to that offensive line for sure.
I hope Brian Bates can play because the center position killed him last year on that offensive line. It's pretty good outside of the center position. There's some interesting young talent on this offensive line. At the tackle position, no matter what you think of Braxton Jones, very serviceable. And Darnell Wright looks like a budding potential 3-4 years down the line guy who could be an all pro. They're decent at guard. They were terrible at center. Mm-hmm. Can they address that? Have they addressed that? I think is still one of the biggest questions remaining for next season.
Yeah, having a bad offensive line can break a quarterback.
Yeah, and a center like that can't block anybody, you have pressure right in your face. You can step up to avoid the rush from the outside. You cannot step up and avoid a defensive tackle running unevaded right in your face.
Yeah, I think it was Ryan Poles who said the quickest path to the quarterback is from the middle, is from the interior defensive line, because you don't have to go around and, you know, it's geometry. It's basic geometry. So, yeah, if you're, and when they signed Bates, and first of all, that was before DeAndre Swift and Keenan Allen and blah, blah, everything that they did in the offseason. So I was in a bad state of mind as it pertains to the Chicago Bears. So when they signed Bates, I was like, that better not be the center. That better not be all that this team is planning on doing. This, you know what I mean?
And I was right there with you.
I've chilled out about that a little bit because
Keenan Allen helped you chill out a little bit.
They've done some other stuff, but I still, at the very least, I'd like to see some competition for that position, if not just somebody who outright usurps him and bumps him down a spot on the depth chart. Because I think he can be, first of all, he maybe is a fine starting center. And Hub Arkish said earlier, he started 17 games for a playoff team last year. You know what I mean? So he's not a scrub. He plays at a certain level that, yeah, he could be your starting center. Will he excel at that position? I don't know. I was hoping he'd be sort of your swing guy on the inside. If you had an injury and you needed a guard, at a right guard or a left guard, you had an injury and you needed a center for a few games. That's what I was hoping he would be for this team. I did not envision him being the answer at center for this team, especially with your franchise number one pick lining up for his first year. You'd like somebody up there who you can really count on to protect him and to lead this offense.
Yeah, text from the 312. Also remember, our centers couldn't even snap the ball properly.
That's a problem.
That's the point. Like, Cody Whitehair could not snap the ball. He could block but couldn't snap the ball. And Lucas Patrick could snap but couldn't block. And I think to a certain extent with they brought in with a Coleman Shelton, I think, from the Rams too, and Ryan Bates. I feel like Ryan Poles is banking on they can't be as bad at that position this year as they were last year. Like, no matter
like
what
not
we think
possible,
of,
yes, or we can't let it happen.
Like, Ryan Bates has to at least be slightly, if not considerably better than what they had at that position last year, because it can't get much worse.
I hope he's right.
Me too.
I really do.
Me too. I'm that's a tough way to go about a very important position like center, but it feels that like that's kind of the approach they're taking.
They only have two picks left unless they make some kind of trade. And by the way, he was asked about that. Ryan Poles was asked about moving up into the second round tomorrow and didn't rule it out. He said, and I quote, potentially. So you could see the Bears pick in round two tomorrow. That's a possibility, but if indeed they only have these two picks left, one in the third and one in the fourth, I wouldn't mind seeing one of those used on a center. And you can find, well, you can find quality players really at any position deep in the NFL draft, but it seems like offensive line more than any other position and interior offensive line more than any other position, you can find some diamonds in the rough. So maybe the starting center isn't on this roster yet. That's a possibility. And he gets drafted on day two of the draft, or maybe there is another wave of free agency coming. Maybe somebody's coming in to compete with Ryan Bates, or just, like I said, bump him down the depth chart. A couple more things I wanted to mention from Ryan Poles press conference real quick. He did say, we talked about the possibility earlier of moving up to get Roma Dunze as their pick was approaching, and it got a little sketchy and there were some teams on the board that were there. He said that it wasn't something that they ruled out, but you also were going to have to give up, you know, either assets in this year's draft, which they already have very few of, or assets in future drafts. Whether it was to move up to get a Dunze or to move up and get another first round pick, which he was also asked about, it's greedy. You know what I mean? Like, it's, to me, it's tempting. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm in a group chat with my brother and a couple other friends, mutual friends who are Bears fans. One of them, Patrick, who called into the show earlier. And after they took a Dunze, he was like, do you think they can move? My brother was like, do you think they can move up and get another first round pick? And like,
tough crowd.
I salivated at the thought, but and hey, it's possible. You know what I mean? These draft value charts, I'm sure you could put together a haul that would have made that possible. But man, it's just greedy. You know what I mean? I wanted that blue chip player with number 9, but after that, it's how many darts do you get to throw at the board? You know what I mean? And that gives you the best chance of finding guys. So I think moving up to get a Dunze, if they had to do that, moving up to get another first round pick, you would have been doing too much. You'd have been getting a little greedy.
I felt like the Chargers pick was the turning point where they knew that they probably didn't have to move up.
Yeah.
For him.
Yep.
Because you look at the Giants and you're thinking, well, they're either going to go quarterback. There was a lot of smoke with them and JJ McCarthy, or they're going to take Malik Nabers, who they had been high on. And then the Titans were almost assuredly going to take an offensive lineman. So then you're sitting there just hoping that either Atlanta takes their pick and doesn't trade it to a team like Buffalo or somebody coming back up into the first round, or the Jets.
Yep.
Moving back up in the first round to get Roma Dunze. So that had to be very nervous moments. And you heard Ryan Poles say, it was nerve-wracking sitting there like, this is our guy. I can't believe that he actually might fall to us at 9, and he did.
You really do get the feel when you heard him talk about that of you know, them sort of tightening up, sitting in their chairs, hoping a Dunze fell to them. And every GM is going to tell you this and try and make you feel this way after a draft, but it feels like they actually got their guy. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm sure they had a plan B or a plan C. They all have draft boards. I even have a draft board. You know what I mean? I'm not even a GM. I have nothing to do with the NFL or any football team. But they all have their big boards, and I'm sure there was somebody behind a Dunze who they would have been fine getting. You know what I mean? They would have been happy, and they would have come to the podium and said, this is the guy we wanted. But I feel like they really, really got the guy that they wanted in Roma Dunze at number 9, which is... It's not often that the guy that the whole fan base really wants aligns with the guy the GM in the front office really wants.
The whole fan base wanted, the whole country wanted for the Bears.
Yeah.
If people from the outside are like, oh, are the Bears a team on the rise? Everybody, Matt Miller, VSPN, Brian Baldinger, mm-hmm. Daniel Jeremiah, I hope that Roma Dunze is there for them at 9. And it's just... it's still kind of shocking that it all just worked out in the most chalky way that everybody was saying that it was. And I think a lot of people the last couple of days were wondering, as I said earlier, is it just wishful thinking? It seems too good to be true that would happen.
It's pretty cool, man.
And it did.
It's pretty cool. This is the best Bears draft night of my life. I'll just go ahead and say it. And the last thing I want to mention that Ryan Poles talked about in his press conference after round one of the NFL draft, when he was asked about moving on from mistakes, and two quotes I wrote down, he said, the players always know,
In other words, if a guy has lost the belief and the faith of his teammates, a GM needs to see that and understand that and move on, because the players always know. And then he said, put your ego aside. And I've been saying for years on any and every platform that I've broadcasted on, and there have been a bunch of them, every GM makes mistakes. Every organization makes mistakes. The real good ones and the real successful ones realize them and correct them as fast as possible. Instead of just trying to cram, I'm forgetting his name now, the wide receiver who was a bust.
Chase Claypool.
Instead of trying to cram a Chase Claypool down our throats and going, no, I gave up a second round pick for him. It has to work.
He's going
to
play.
Right. He saw it and he was like, no, I messed up. I almost just cursed. You almost just had to use the dump button there. It's almost 1 a.m. But he said, no, I messed up. I need to correct this. And he did. He got him out of the building. He got something for him. I don't even remember what it was, what he got when he traded him to Miami. But got
six-round pick, maybe.
If he got nothing for him, I'm okay with that. To recognize your mistakes quickly and correct them is what makes great organizations great. Instead of trying to force it. And if again, we're entering year three of the Ryan Poles era. I had my questions after the first 2 years. I feel real good about heading into year three and what he's done here. But if that's really, and that's not just lip service, that he trusts his players and he says the players always know, and that he puts his ego aside when he makes mistakes and corrects them, that makes me feel so, so good about the Bears general manager. That's a trait that is crucial to being a good GM in any sport. Recognize your mistakes and correct them as quick as you possibly can. And don't let your ego get in the way. It's a great night. It's a great night for Bears fans. I have one more segment to celebrate it with you. You can get in at 312-644-6767. You can give me a call. You can drop me a text. Alex Kuhn is on the other side of the glass. We're with you for one more segment till 1 a.m. on night one of our draft coverage right here on 670 The Score.
Our live draft coverage continues on 670 The Score, presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Rami Makhlouf with you for one more segment, concluding night one of our draft coverage right here on 670 The Score. It started with the Parkins and Spiegel draft special. Danny Parkins tweeted, 19 minutes ago, I'm in Detroit, nowhere near sleep, despite being awake for 21 straight hours because the Bears actually got Rome Odunze to pair with Caleb Williams. I can't believe it, even though we talked about it for months, it actually happened. Yeah, it did. Like, we all knew Caleb Williams was happening. And we all had, you know, visions of Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers. Or, and most likely, I saw this in more mock drafts than I did the previous two mentioned wide receivers, Rome Odunze falling to them at 9. And we were like, oh, man, we could have a quarterback and DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Rome Odunze. Like, it seemed like a pipe dream when the night started. You know what I mean? The fact we're getting the number one quarterback and what people keep calling a generational talent is enough of a pipe dream in and of itself. But to get one of these high-end wide receivers to pair with him at number 9, yeah, it almost feels like a dream. Now, there's a long way to go before this actually feels like a dream. But as far as drafts go, it's kind of what we all hoped and dreamed for and wished for.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that Danny's having the same like processing of us manifesting this what seemed like a pipe dream. And you always wonder, they're going to take somebody completely out of left field, because that's what the Bears do.
Mm-hmm. Dude, there was a small part of me, because a lot of the time when a team has the number one pick in the draft, they'll just, if not officially, you'll hear it leak out months before the draft even happens. Like the Bears are taking Caleb. They were very, and I don't know why. I don't know if the league asked them to be, but they were kind of
not showing their cards. You can show your cards. Like, nobody can jump ahead of you and take Caleb Williams. You have the number one pick. You can show your cards. Now, they did, in a sense, in trading Justin Fields, but there was a small part of me that was like, he's going to walk up there and say Drake May or something, isn't he? You know what I mean? Like, I knew they were taking Caleb Williams, but I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a small part of me. But especially, yeah, at number
Joe Altz.
At number nine, yeah, he could have said anybody.
That's why I was like mentally preparing myself, like, oh, Byron Murphy wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah, and it could have been justified. You know what I mean? Like, we all wanted Roma Dunze, but other picks could have been justified there. You know what I mean? But he didn't. He took the guy that we all wanted. Got about 5 minutes left. Let me get in Kevin from Lockport. You're on 670 The Score. What's up, Kev?
Merry Christmas. For those who celebrate draft day, it's all about hope and excitement, and there's no city with more hope and excitement than Chicago. We have been looking for a quarterback for 100 years, and hopefully we've got him, and we may have the greatest three wide receiver set that the NFL has ever seen. How could you not be excited about this?
Yeah, I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. I appreciate the call, Kevin. There, and I mentioned there were people early in the show who were calling me and Hub. I saw in the text wet blanket because we weren't, you know, jumping for joy or. Basically, our point was, let's not put the cart before the horse. You got a great prospect in Caleb Williams. You got another great prospect in Roma Dunze. They've made a lot of what look like good moves this offseason, and things seem to be headed in a positive direction. But you can't just jump to the conclusion, oh, Caleb Williams is in the Hall of Fame in, you know, 2045 or whatever the case might be. Like, there is a lot of work to be done, and quite frankly, you need to get a little bit lucky. That's an element of any, you know, championship run or great career. There's a little bit of luck in being in the right place at the right time, being healthy, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I'm as happy as I can be today with the draft pick of Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, but I also know that, you know, the job ain't done yet, and there's a lot of things that need to happen between now and getting where, you know, I dream of the Bears someday getting, of getting a quarterback who gets to the point that I've dreamed all my life of a Bears quarterback getting to. You know what I mean? So if that's wet blanket, then I guess I'm a wet blanket, because I'm not ready to sit here to say they're going to win the Super Bowl and Caleb Williams is the MVP in 2024.
Yeah, like I think a lot of people, when they hear that he's a generational prospect, they assume that, oh, he's a finished product and he doesn't have any learning to do at the NFL level and how to fit in an NFL offense and get the ball to his weapons at the NFL level. And that could not be further from the truth. He has a lot of growing still left to do, but he's going to be able to do it with a team that has built around him and in a situation that is designed for him to succeed. So that's the saving grace for everybody here. Even if you think, oh, they should have kept Justin, they should have kept going in that direction, at least they have a quarterback coming in. Some people don't think that Caleb is this generational talent. I think he's a very good prospect, but he's going to have every opportunity to succeed with what is around him.
He's the best prospect the Bears have had at quarterback.
Absolutely.
In our lives.
Absolutely. But he will have some things that he's going to, some growing pains, and naturally. It's going to happen.
And he's still a prospect.
Yes.
Nothing is guaranteed. And I mentioned the article, I'm trying to find the exact quote right now, but I mentioned the article earlier up at The Athletic from Mike Jones, titled "Why Drafting a Successful NFL Quarterback Remains an Exact Science." And he quotes Lee Steinberg, the famous sports agent in there, who says, it's impossible, I'm paraphrasing now because I can't find the exact quote, he says it's impossible that every quarterback that didn't make it was a bust, was just never going to be great. Like, some of that had to be incompetence on an organizational level, of not putting that guy in a position to succeed and develop and flourish. It looks like the Bears are. It looks like the Bears are. But this is step one. This is step one in developing a great quarterback and winning Super Bowls and years of glory and things we've never seen as Bears fans. This has been fun, man. This has been pretty awesome. Just to be a part of this draft coverage tonight for yours truly has been pretty awesome. Thanks to Hub Arkish, who joined me for the first couple hours of the show. Mark Grody, who joined us from Hallis Hall. Alex Kuhn on the other side of the glass. And all of you who listened and contributed to the show tonight. This has been night one of the Scores NFL draft coverage. I'm Rami Makhlouf. It continues all day tomorrow, starting with Mully and Haw. I'll talk to you again soon.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Our live draft coverage continues on 670 The Score, presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Rami Makhlouf with you for one more segment, concluding night one of our draft coverage right here on 670 The Score. It started with the Parkins and Spiegel draft special. Danny Parkins tweeted, 19 minutes ago, I'm in Detroit, nowhere near sleep, despite being awake for 21 straight hours because the Bears actually got Rome Odunze to pair with Caleb Williams. I can't believe it, even though we talked about it for months, it actually happened. Yeah, it did. Like, we all knew Caleb Williams was happening. And we all had, you know, visions of Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers. Or, and most likely, I saw this in more mock drafts than I did the previous two mentioned wide receivers, Rome Odunze falling to them at 9. And we were like, oh, man, we could have a quarterback and DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Rome Odunze. Like, it seemed like a pipe dream when the night started. You know what I mean? The fact we're getting the number one quarterback and what people keep calling a generational talent is enough of a pipe dream in and of itself. But to get one of these high-end wide receivers to pair with him at number 9, yeah, it almost feels like a dream. Now, there's a long way to go before this actually feels like a dream. But as far as drafts go, it's kind of what we all hoped and dreamed for and wished for.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that Danny's having the same like processing of us manifesting this what seemed like a pipe dream. And you always wonder, they're going to take somebody completely out of left field, because that's what the Bears do.
Mm-hmm. Dude, there was a small part of me, because a lot of the time when a team has the number one pick in the draft, they'll just, if not officially, you'll hear it leak out months before the draft even happens. Like the Bears are taking Caleb. They were very, and I don't know why. I don't know if the league asked them to be, but they were kind of not showing their cards. You can show your cards. Like, nobody can jump ahead of you and take Caleb Williams. You have the number one pick. You can show your cards. Now, they did, in a sense, in trading Justin Fields, but there was a small part of me that was like, he's going to walk up there and say Drake May or something, isn't he? You know what I mean? Like, I knew they were taking Caleb Williams, but I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a small part of me. But especially, yeah, at number
Joe Alt.
At number 9, yeah, he could have said anybody.
I was like mentally preparing myself, like, oh, Byron Murphy wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah, and it could have been justified. You know what I mean? Like, we all wanted Rome Odunze, but other picks could have been justified there. You know what I mean? But he didn't. He took the guy that we all wanted. Got about 5 minutes left. Let me get in Kevin from Lockport. You're on 670 The Score. What's up, Kev?
Merry Christmas. For those who celebrate draft day,
it's all about hope and excitement, and there's no city with more hope and excitement than Chicago. We have been looking for a quarterback for 100 years, and hopefully we've got him, and we may have the greatest three wide receiver set that the NFL has ever seen. How could you not be excited about this?
Yeah, I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. I appreciate the call, Kevin. There, and I mentioned there were people early in the show who were calling me and Hub. I saw in the text wet blanket because we weren't, you know, jumping for joy basically our point was, let's not put the cart before the horse. You got a great prospect in Caleb Williams. You got another great prospect in Roma Dunze. They've made a lot of what look like good moves this offseason, and things seem to be headed in a positive direction. But you can't just jump to the conclusion, oh, Caleb Williams is in the Hall of Fame in, you know, 2045 or whatever the case might be. Like, there is a lot of work to be done, and quite frankly, you need to get a little bit lucky. That's an element of any, you know, championship run or great career. There's a little bit of luck in being in the right place at the right time, being healthy, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I'm as happy as I can be today with the draft pick of Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, but I also know that, you know, the job ain't done yet, and there's a lot of things that need to happen between now and getting where, you know, I dream of the Bears someday getting, of getting a quarterback who gets to the point that I've dreamed all my life of a Bears quarterback getting to. You know what I mean? So if that's wet blanket, then I guess I'm a wet blanket, because I'm not ready to say they're going to win the Super Bowl and Caleb Williams is the MVP in 2024.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of people, when they hear that he's a generational prospect, they assume that, oh, he's a finished product, and he doesn't have any learning to do at the NFL level and how to fit in an NFL offense and get the ball to his weapons at the NFL level. And that could not be further from the truth. He has a lot of growing still left to do, but he's going to be able to do it with a team that has built around him and in a situation that is designed for him to succeed. So that's the saving grace for everybody here. Even if you think, oh, they should have kept Justin, they should have kept going in that direction. At least they have a quarterback coming in. Some people don't think that Caleb is this generational talent. I think he's a very good prospect, but he's going to have every opportunity to succeed with what is around him.
He's the best prospect the Bears have had at quarterback.
Absolutely.
In our lives.
Absolutely. But he will have some things that he's going to, some growing pains, and naturally. It's going to happen.
And he's still a prospect.
Yes.
Nothing is guaranteed. And I mentioned the article, I'm trying to find the exact quote right now, but I mentioned the article earlier up at The Athletic from Mike Jones, titled "Why Drafting a Successful NFL Quarterback Remains an Exact Science." And he quotes Lee Steinberg, the famous sports agent in there, who says, it's impossible, I'm paraphrasing now because I can't find the exact quote, he says it's impossible that every quarterback that didn't make it was a bust, was just never going to be great. Like, some of that had to be incompetence on an organizational level, of not putting that guy in a position to succeed and develop and flourish. It looks like the Bears are. It looks like the Bears are. But this is step one. This is step one in developing a great quarterback and winning Super Bowls and years of glory and things we've never seen as Bears fans. This has been fun, man. This has been pretty awesome. Just to be a part of this draft coverage tonight for yours truly has been pretty awesome. Thanks to Hub Arkish, who joined me for the first couple hours of the show, Mark Grody, who joined us from Hallis Hall, Alex Kuhn on the other side of the glass, and all of you who listened and contributed to the show tonight. This has been night one of the Scores NFL draft coverage. I'm Rami Makhlouf. It continues all day tomorrow, starting with Mully and Haw. I'll talk to you again soon.
Oh.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.